Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, and we continue through our 2019 season, week three right now, of the leadership journey. And joining me is our co-host, Brian Kite. Brian, great to be here in week three of the season to help some coaches out, help everybody get better.
I love it. Had the first college football weekend has gone by. We got the NFL starting to roll out, and obviously high school ball is moving along. We are into the thick of it now. It is in season officially.
The season really brings about the opportunity to see all of those things we put in place in the offseason. I don't know really of many teams right now who don't have some kind of offseason, you know, official kind of programmed out team building, culture building, leadership building, call it what you want, type of program. And there's a lot of words said. There's a lot of things printed on T-shirts, a lot of things painted on walls that now we're seeing, is it real? What have you really put behind this? Can you live up to it? Have you lived up to it? Do you have really the behaviors that support it? And that's going to be our topic today. We're going to look at maybe some overused words and underused actions.
Yeah, this is something I wanted to talk about, Keith, because, you know, maybe there's a couple foundational groundwork pieces that we ought to discuss going into this. But here's why I wanted to talk about this, why I thought this would be a good topic early in this season of the leadership journey. And it's because too many rich words have taken on a cheap meaning, right? Too many deep principles have become shallow in practice. We still use all the words, but now we use them all the time, and we use them in cheaper ways, and we put them onto Twitter, and we put them on T-shirts, all the things that you're saying. And what we realize, if we just take an objective look, again, a non-judgmental, no criticism, I think that's one of the hardest parts. Maybe it's one of my concerns, Keith. One of my concerns is that a coach listens to this, and rather than view it through an objective lens, they view it through a personal lens of, well, that doesn't apply to me, or personal attack, or they hear us talking about or referencing something that they do and sort of just immediately gets on the defensive. And I've said it before on here. I think one of the things coaches struggle with the most, and they are one of the worst groups at it, in my observation across 15 years of professional experience in just about every industry, coaches are among the most defensive profession that I've ever worked with. If you said, hey, what group gets defensive the fastest? No question, it's coaches. No question, it's coaches. Doctors, bankers, manufacturers, executives, middle managers, insurance, without a doubt, coaches are the most, on the whole, per capita, the most defensive professional group of people that exist that I've worked with. And that's just one person's opinion.
Yeah, that's interesting, Brian. What things have you seen, I guess, that you've come to that conclusion or made that analysis that we are? What are the things you see from coaches?
Well, I mean, look, a doctor, for example, a heart surgeon, and I'm going to go with professions that I've interacted with, right? Let's go. I mean, I've worked with heart surgeons, but let's go to something maybe a little bit more accessible. A CPA, an accountant, okay? An accountant isn't going out every Friday and performing their in front of a stadium of 1,500 people, or if you're a high school coach in Texas, you know, 30,000 people, right? They're not doing that every week in front of other people and in dealing with an entire community who all wants to chime in. So football coaches get more criticism than other professions. Football coaches are dealing in emotional environments with teenagers, and not just football coaches, softball coaches do as well. Football just happens to have a certain level of popularity. So you're exposed a little bit more as a football coach, no doubt. But I think what separates coaches And again, we're just talking football right now. What makes it so frequent and common for football coaches is that there's this illusion of control that a football coach has, and then a coach historically has tried to create. And again, we've talked about it on the podcast many times. Football coaches get caught thinking they control this kingdom of football, and ego slides in there, and control slides in there, and politics slides in there. And right away, you know, when the emotion gets in there, and so many coaches with good hearts want to make this thing successful, but they make the mistake of trying to control it to success. And then when that criticism comes in, and the energy and the enthusiasm, and in a male-dominated environment, right, the testosterone and the ego comes along with it, really quickly it comes, you know, force your idea, defend yourself. If you accept criticism of you, that means you're soft, and so you defend yourself. And it just right away, it's so easy to think that, you know, not defending yourself or allowing yourself to get criticized is somehow being vulnerable and weak, and, you know, makes you look weak in this male-dominated environment. And, you know, look, I'm the last person in the world who's going to advocate what a lot of the world is advocating right now of this, you know, being a man is toxic. You know, that's BS. Like, I'm a man's man. I want to be a dude, right? I'm going to compete. But the reality is, if I get defensive, that's the softest thing of all time. Like, that's the most soft you can be, is get defensive. So that, I mean, that's when I look at, you know, when I look at these guys who, you know, on the surface, you know, have all this, you know, toughness and, you know, ego and all this different stuff, and then they get defensive. Like, I look right through it. It's like, that you're soft. You're just soft. You can't handle somebody pointing out you did something wrong. Come on. So I mentioned this because here's why we get on this topic. I say that because I don't want coaches to misinterpret what I'm saying or what we're talking about on this, Keith, because I want to help the profession. But if you're uncoachable, it's hard to help. If you don't listen, if you won't take it in, you know, just turn it off. Like, if you don't want to hear something that you might not be doing great, or that you might only be doing 50% well, if you're not even interested in hearing that, or you're going to get defensive at the first thing that touches a nerve or a hot button with you, like, just turn the episode off and go do something that reaffirms something you already believe, because you're wasting your time. And I don't want you to judge me for pointing something out and then getting offended that I actually called you out for some things you're not doing very well. I don't want you to look at me like that, because we're not even on the same page. So you can save both of us the time. But don't come back and get offended or upset for pointing out some of the obvious that's right here. And one of those obvious things is we use too many words in coaching, where the words are empty because the actions are not following through on the words that are being said.
Well, and I think it's important, Brian, to point out that the whole design of this podcast, the whole design of the leadership journey, is to coach the coaches. It's back to your original hypothesis of thinking of about who you are and why you got into this. Is, you know, this is something you're passionate about. Football. Football's important to you. You believe a lot can be accomplished through this vehicle, and you want to see it thrive, right? And as much as anything, you know, we and this is a topic for another conversation, because we're out there maybe being too defensive about our game, you know, as it's under attack in media and those kinds of things. The point is that we have to be great in what we do as coaches and what we can control. And the design of this, putting it up at the beginning of the week, allows coaches really to have some food for thought, really reflect back on what is it you did this last week on the field? Where can you get better? Do some of these things apply to you? Where do they apply? It's certainly not that it's a criticism of coaches, but I think it's sometimes, you know, the whole design of it is you want to say some things that at first on a surface level to coaches are maybe a little controversial to them, or a little, that doesn't apply to me. But I think we need to reflect. I think that's the only way we get better. We have to reflect and take the coaching. I mean, for us, to me, this show is like a Saturday morning when we're sitting there and film, and what do we expect our players to take and get from it? And by no means are you up front here ripping anybody, but You know, that's the whole idea. We got to talk about some real things here in order to get better as coaches.
Yeah, you and I were talking about before we turned it on and started recording, we'll save this conversation, what you and I were talking about before we started recording today, about the, I think maybe you've seen it on a video. The one that comes to mind is that I think is the linebackers coach of the Dallas Cowboys, who was looking at Sean Lee and who was the linebacker from Boise State who plays with him. Great, great player. Anyway, he was coaching him up, right? And you and I think we've both seen it. A lot of coaches have of, hey, we're not trying to be offended. We just get excited and we're just coaching you hard. And, you know, it's all love, but this is great players can get coached hard without taking it personally. Oh, okay, cool. Then let's apply the same principle here and we're going to do the same thing to you. So what's going to happen is I'm going to get after your ass, coaches. I'm going to coach you hard, coaches. I'm going to rip you. I'm going to criticize you. And I'm going to point out where you failed, and I'm going to do it with intensity. I'm going to do it directly. I'm going to call out the exact behavior, and if it's not good enough, I'm going to say so right in your face. And I want you to take it. I want you to not take it personally. I want you to evaluate, and I want you to go work to get better. Now, what's going to happen is I don't personally like to do it like that. That's not my approach. I don't want to do it like that. I think we'll save the conversation of whether that's the most effective approach and whether or not we ought to use that justification. But here's the point from a principal perspective. It's this. I just want to coach hard and well. What I'm most interested in is I'm not interested in the style. Like if a coach wants to sit down and have a conversation, we'll sit down and have a talk. If a coach needs some intensity, well, then I'll use that. I don't want to use my style to get it across. I want to use the most effective style. Now, of course, my style is going to fold its way in, and it's impossible not to, but I want to have a few different approaches. So I guess look at it across the board. It's like, okay, you know, sometimes we get juiced up, and we're an intense sport, and so we're gonna coach hard. Well, all I'm going to ask, we talked about it 2 weeks ago, just live the standards that you ask of your players, right? Like, if you're going to coach that way, get coached that way, or at least don't get offended if you get coached that way. Now you might not want that from me. You won't hurt my feelings if you're like, look, I got no interest in BK talking to me like that. Cool. Then get somebody else. It's all good. Right? Like get somebody who brings it to you. So here's where we're gonna start today. That being said, now that groundwork is laid and there's some shared understanding here. And for those of you who are still listening and haven't just turned the podcast off, I'm glad you're here. Thank you for being here. And I'm not upset if you're gone. Too many rich words, Keith, like I said, have taken on cheap meaning. And I wanted to carve some time out to maybe relook at some of these words that have been overused where the action behind them is underused. Here's why this needs to be discussed. Little environment setting. We're not dealing in the same media consumption and attention environment of 20 years ago. And this is again, don't let your brain go into, oh yeah, kids today, blah, blah, blah. No, shut that down. Shut that off. Here's the only thing I'm talking about. The only thing I'm talking about it is this. There's just more today. That's it. That's the only thing I want you to think about. There's just more. Okay. So the average person, the average teenager, the average 30-year-old, 40-year-old, 50-year-old, they're dealing with like 100 times more messages coming at them than ever before. So from a words perspective, in just 1 year's time, we're seeing more things on College Game Day, more things on YouTube, more things on Twitter, more things on Instagram, more things on Netflix, more things from our parents, more shared videos on Facebook. And there's all these messages and motivationals and blah, 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 more training this, more that. And so the volume of stuff has increased so much that words mean less than ever before. They mean less than they ever have in the history of time because we can just consume something so fast today. So you've got to understand that whatever message – I understand this about, you know, I'm on social. I understand this. I put out a video or a tweet or a post or this podcast or whatever, and it performs super well. It means nothing. That doesn't mean anything. So what? Like, people put out videos all the time that do this, and people put out these phrases and these quotes, like a keynote speech, you know, this powerful motivational. I could not possibly care less. The only thing that matters is the action behind it. So here's a couple things with that in mind, is we've got to watch the words that we're using, and we've got to make sure that the words are actually producing actions that mean something. And the second part about this is that there's more words than ever before. And before I launch into, you know, I think I've got four that I've nailed down that I want to focus on, some overused words that don't have the actions. The other thing I want to put behind it, Keith, is that you're not just dealing with an environment where there's more being talked about than ever before. So your words are kind of being thrown into a much bigger ocean. You've also got to recognize that everybody else, if you use a word that everybody else uses, you're also jumping into a Me Too stream, right? You're jumping into a river of other people who've also used that word, and you've just kind of thrown yourself into the whitewash of it all. And so now you're dealing with that player. You're dealing with everybody else who's ever heard that word, used that word, everyone else, anybody they've ever heard use that word. And so say by the time they get to college, I tell college coaches this all the time. If you get to college and a coach is using a certain word, just understand, you're now dealing with that player's emotions, opinions, and embedded beliefs of every coach they've ever heard use that word before. You're not dealing with what you think the word is. You're dealing with everything the player thinks that word is based on every adult who's ever used that word with them before. And discipline is one of those that we're not going to talk about that one today. Discipline's one of those words for me. By the time a player gets to college, their understanding of discipline is so screwed up because of how screwed up all of the uses of discipline have been up to that point in their life. And so a coach comes up and is like, be disciplined. and they have no idea what the player associates and interprets that word as. And I'm like, do you know what the player is doing with that word inside their heart, in their soul, in their mind? And they're like, well, no, it's supposed to be. And I'm like, no. It ain't what the word is supposed to be. It's what the player is doing with that word in their head afterward. And have you taught the word its structure, its core, and the action that you specifically want it to drive in a non-cliched way, the way every other coach has described it, so that the player is converting the language into the exact action that you want in the way you want it applied? Because that's how we teach football, but we just don't teach language that way. Those two things make sense about the fact that we've got this ocean of language that we're swimming in now, and this ocean of stuff. And number two is every word already has meaning coming with it because players have heard so much by now around these common words that get used in coaching a lot.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense. And it made me think, Brian, of, you know, recently, about a week ago, had a coach from Fordham come on, and he used the phrase to teach your players to feel their fundamentals, not just tell them what their fundamentals are, but to feel their fundamentals. And to me, this is kind of the same framework. I've been, after that, kind of got into a little bit of studying, reading articles on coaching cues and how those are best done and how players understand things. And I think right now it's really a focus on having better cues and all these things that, you know, these four words you're going to talk about, to make sure that it's very clear this is what we mean, and this is the behavior that comes along with it.
Why I like it is it mirrors what we do in football, right? We say, you know, tell a receiver, stem him. It would be really nice if the player knew everything that required, but they don't. And so we say stem him, and then we teach exactly what that means and context and application and how sometimes stem changes based on certain situations. And then from then on, we can use the word stem, but we teach it over and over and over and over, and then we get the details over and over and over. But that word now means exactly what we all want it to mean. And then there's the flexibility driven by context. But without, if all we ever said was stem, and then we said stem means get leverage, right? Like, be disciplined. And then the player kind of whatever, and then you yell, do it right. Like, that's the extent of the coaching. Like, just don't be surprised when players don't act particularly disciplined. Just don't be surprised. Because if we coach football that way, we would never execute the way we want it. So here's the first two words. The first two words that come to my mind are culture and integrity. Overused, underapplied. I think first, because those, and the reason those two jumped out is that they're frequently and commonly used. They're super popular in the coaching world, and they're super popular in the team world. But both of them are misunderstood, and they're equally misapplied because of that. Let's start with the word integrity first and foremost. This is the one that everyone, I mean, just about every leader and business person mismanages this word because it got super popular and it feels really good to use. And, you know, it feels like it's a character word that we ought to use. And a lot of people like to, you know, they feel very good about themselves claiming integrity. I've yet to hear somebody claim the absence of integrity, but everybody's very proud of themselves for claiming integrity. Here's what integrity isn't. It's not doing the right thing. That's not integrity. First, because what's the right thing? Second, who defines the right thing? Third, what if your right thing isn't my right thing? Right assumes, Keith, that you are right and that you know what's right for everybody. And same thing would be for me. But what if what's right for me isn't right for you? Does one of us lack integrity? Like, this is why I have a problem with the statement, do the right thing. It assumes that everybody has decided and defined and aligned what is right. And the answer is there's 1,000 right things. Now, on a team, I do want to get to what's right for us, right? I do want to get to some core stuff that's right. But in most teams that I've been on, they're not aligned enough for everything. And also, we haven't defined, look, this is what, when I say right, this is what I mean. I mean these three things. Now, if that's the case, then great. I think there's some better phrases than that. So here's what integrity is. What integrity is, it's to be whole and undivided. That's what it means to have integrity. It means to be whole and to be undivided. I love that undivided part from a team perspective. Integrity is being aligned in your belief and your behavior. It's why I make the point, and then we'll come to this in culture. It's why I make the point. A belief has a purpose, and that is to produce a behavior. So the price for believing in something is that you have to do it. And if you don't do it, it's because you don't actually believe it. You lack integrity. You lack wholeness. You are divided between your belief and your behavior. So the overused word is integrity. The underused action is aligning all of your behavior perfectly. And I use that word, I don't know, maybe I want to stay away from the word perfectly because I think people take that to the extreme. Aligning your behavior, right? Aligning your behavior exceptionally well with your belief system. Do not be divided between things that you believe in and how you act in the world. We could take that all the way down to practice. We could take it all the way up to how we live our lives, you know, at a personal level and who we are as a person. That's what integrity is. Integrity is not being a good person. That's being nice. Call yourself kind. Call yourself empathetic. Call yourself all kinds of things. Integrity is not, you know, claiming to have good morals. Just say, I have good morals. Integrity is being consistent, whole, aligned, and undivided in the action you engage in from the belief system that you hold. That's where the work is. And that's hard as hell, Keith. That is it's hard, okay, to live your belief system just like you believe it. That's tough because the world challenges it. You get criticized for that. You get flack for that. You lose relationships for that. People leave your program for that. Parents don't like when you do that. So I think that's the first one. If we're going to talk about integrity, let's either scale that word down and use some more specific language to talk about being a good person or kind or nice or moral or whatever we want to talk about. You know, a lot of people talk about integrity when it comes to their faith. That's cool. But then just talk about your faith. Like, don't dress it up with, you know, some catch-all phrase. Then just talk about your faith then. But if we're going to use the word integrity, we've got to know what it means. Whole, undivided, aligned, aligning your behavior with your belief system.
Brian, I think coaches are always kind of the visual type, right? We like to see film. We want to see the diagram on the board. What does that look like for a coach? let's say, you know, that guy who's, you know, does his stuff in the classroom, says certain things, goes on the field, expects certain things. What is an example of what integrity looks like for the coach out on the field?
I mean, here's integrity. Integrity is the simplest one, right? I'm honest. I tell the truth. Okay. Then be honest and tell the truth. Don't calculate out the price of telling the truth and then hide the truth when you think the price is too high. That's a lack of integrity. That's saying you tell the truth, but then not telling the truth because you think it would cost you too much, that you're now divided in your belief and your behavior. You say you believe in telling the truth, but then your behavior was you thought the price for the truth would be too high, and so you don't tell it. That's a lack of integrity. To coach your players hard and then reject hard coaching for yourself is a lack of integrity. Now, right away, I say this out loud because I've been teaching this for 15 years, Keith. I say that out loud right there, like saying a lack of integrity. Like those are fighting words for some people, right? Like I mean, it's almost like I can picture some coaches listening to this right now, like making a face, you know, in the car and like, I disagree with him because they just can't comprehend in their head how they could lack integrity because it violates their entire understanding of themselves. And you got to detach from yourself a little bit to wrestle with this. I mean, I again, integrity in me, I have to do this. Like, I don't talk about this and put these words out there and say these things because I haven't and don't wrestle with them myself. I look at myself and I ask myself, where do I lack integrity? Look, it's not, Keith, I think the question for me is not, do I have integrity gaps? It's where do I have integrity gaps? And I don't view the word integrity and equate it to my whole person. I equate integrity like, here's what I was thinking of. Because we use the word, it's structural integrity for buildings and bridges and all that stuff, right? That's what that is, right? And the reason we do it is because the word integrity means to be whole and undivided and aligned as it's supposed to be, right? And so something that's built well has integrity. Something that's not built well looks kind of shaky. You'd be like, ooh, that looks like it kind of lacks integrity. Why? Well, it's put together, but what? These pieces don't all look like they're aligned. They look like, or you see something that has a crack in it, and you're like, well, that thing kind of lacks integrity right there. Like the bridge is up, but I see a crack over here. I wonder if the integrity might be in question. That's what I look at it in myself. It's like, I'm up, I'm here, I'm functional, I'm working. But man, if there's a little crack, there's a little integrity gap. Yeah, my integrity is kind of shaky over here. I don't view it as a switch. You have it or you don't. No, it's a dynamic. It's full. And sometimes I find cracks, right? Sometimes I find in myself behaviors I'm not living fully out as I think I believe them because they're hard as hell to live. And so I got to do one of two things. I got to shift my belief system to match the behavior that I'm willing to engage in, or I got to ramp up the discipline of my behavior to match the belief that I'm claiming. And if I can't, well, then I got to adjust my belief system. So it's telling the truth. It's being empathetic. For me, it's something like if I believe that, and I do, right? If I believe in, you know, sometimes you got to be able to disagree with people and it's okay for people to be themselves, even if they don't agree, it's looking at people who have different styles and belief systems than I do that maybe even I really disagree with, and leaving them space to have that disagreement without judging their moral character for it. Whether that's, you know, politics or personal style or, you know, social agenda or whatever it is, it's like, can you be a good person and just believe different things than I do about the world? I do believe that. What's the price for me believing that? The price for me believing that is I've got to interact with good people who I really disagree with and not judge them for it.
Yeah, Brian, I think of your diagram I've seen you use before of that big arrow pointing in one direction and all those little arrows of different shapes and sizes within it, kind of representing all the different individuals and the different things they bring to the table. They are not exactly the same, many of them different. You know, when you think of a team and us being one of those arrows inside of there, the integrity is when all those arrows are pointing the same direction as that big one arrow. And this is, like you said, this is dynamic. This is going to change. There's going to be times where if we're doing it the right way, we're reflecting and say, yeah, my behavior was a little bit out of alignment there. And essentially what we're saying is, you know, in the whole picture of what we're doing as a team, and we're leaders of that team, that there's a gap in integrity there. I have to right the ship. I have to get it going the same direction in order for our structure of a team to have integrity.
Yes. And that's why I love that's why I put that word in there, is the undivided part and the aligned part, because of the team backdrop of this conversation. It's a team with integrity is a team that is undivided. The team without integrity that has cracks in its foundation. Okay. An absence of integrity is not, again, I think this is worth restating. We're not talking a light switch. Integrity, yes. Integrity, no. It's not like you say you lack integrity and it's like you're morally decrepit or something like that, which is what I think people emotionally go to. Yeah. It's if you're divided, you've just got cracks. Now, you know, if it's crumbling, well, that's because you have a huge gap. And you can be 90% great and have 10% if it's the wrong portion of you that lacks integrity. It can undermine the whole effort. Just like on a team, you can have, you know, you can have 40 really good players. But if the, you know, the right 10 players who, you know, influence your team, well, then that team's foundation and alignment is off. And, you know, I think that's what makes it, you know, that's what makes it so interesting. So integrity is the first word, right? Overused, underapplied, under-executed, and it comes from the misunderstanding. And so let's not go all or nothing with integrity. Let's look at integrity as to be whole and undivided. However, here's what I would say. If you're not going to properly define integrity, and you're not going to teach it, and you're not going to work it, and you're not going to get into those mechanics of it, here's what I would say. Don't even use it, because it will do more harm than good. It will, using the word integrity without actually teaching it and what it actually means, it'll do more harm than good, because it'll put a moral and ethical cloud and anchor over people that will ultimately hold them back. And in the worst case scenarios, Keith, and this is how I see people using it and where I get juiced up, the worst case scenarios is people use the word integrity to claim moral high ground over other human beings and flex some kind of moral muscle on people, like somehow because they're a good person that they're better than you. And if you get caught in that position, you're done. Like, you're done. There's nothing that every human being on the planet just, it's like you ever seen a cat see a cucumber, Keith? You ever seen these videos? Have you ever seen that, right? It's like every cat in the world, for whatever reason, right, they see a cucumber and they lose their mind, right? Human beings are that way. By the way, if you haven't seen that video, like, this is the one thing I'll authorize, just go watch 60 seconds of it, because it's pretty funny. No more than 60 seconds. Don't fall into the cat video black hole. But it's really funny. You see a cat, like, they jump and they lose their mind. Human beings are that way with people who try to claim moral high ground and come across as better than others. It's the same. It's a natural human instinct. We can't stand people like that. So if you get caught in that position, if I get caught in that position, I'm done. It's so hard to recover from that. So teach the word integrity. If we're not going to teach the word integrity, then use different language and be very specific about what you actually mean. Second word, Keith, that is overused, underapplied, is a common one that I use a lot, and that is culture. And it really bums me out, because I still to this day have to teach culture and unwind a lot of the misshapen beliefs about it. Culture is not written core values. It's not sort of this fuzzy feeling that people have. Culture is not your general atmosphere around your program. Culture is the shared beliefs. It's the aligned behaviors, and it's the common experience inside your program. Culture is shared beliefs. It's aligned behaviors. And it's the common experience. Notice what I didn't say. It's not the behaviors that you want. It's the aligned behaviors that people are already engaging in. So if you have aligned behaviors of complaining, then you have a complaining culture. If you have a common experience of defensiveness, well, then you have a defensiveness culture. So it's whatever beliefs that people actually share, whatever behavior actually people are aligning behind and whatever the real common experience of the program is. The primary question when it comes to culture, Keith, is does it produce great execution? Right, this is where we talk about the word versus the action. The primary question inside culture is, does it produce great execution? The problem with culture change or people who are working on culture is that culture always promises so much, but it frequently produces so little. That, like, this is the most common thing. I mean, every coach in the world, we're going to do our culture. We're going to do our culture. We're going to change our culture. We're going to focus on culture. We're going to build our culture. We're going to create a culture of. It promises everything. And most of the time, it produces very little. And that's because it tends to be words, not actions.
Yeah, Brian, I couldn't agree more with this. I do think it's very misunderstood. I see the word thrown out there in a million different ways and actually devaluing other very important parts of what we do with strategy, with execution, and it's an important part of it. But to say that it's separate, and I think we'll probably set this aside and maybe go into this deeper because, you know, culture should and does work very well and needs strategy. So we could talk about that at another time. But again, it's one of those things that's misunderstood. And I think the whole thing you're pointing out is if we use words that we really don't go deep into educating our players about, just like that word STEM, right? Well, what does STEM mean? Well, our guy, by the time we're able to say STEM to him, really understands it, can show it what it looks like, can demonstrate it, can show it on film, can point it out, can tell you what it means as he's drawing a diagram. Like, he gets it. So if we just start throwing the word out there and we don't have the things, the important things that go along with it, the beliefs that drive the behaviors that produce the results that execute, and then we're missing out on something. And, you know, we've talked at length about culture on here, and I know we could go back. I'll certainly put some links to some previous ones, and I think we could have some other conversations about this as the season goes on. But again, I agree, just like with that other word, if you're not going to do the work behind it to really educate your team, your players, that's the most important part, your team. I mean, we like to throw it out there on social media and show people what it means, but they're really not going to get it. But our team needs it. We need our team needs to have that integrity because that culture is strong and it has produced the behaviors.
Yeah, you don't need anybody on the outside to get it. Look, Keith, in culture, I guess two comments. One, never ever confuse an elegant phrase for a valuable action. This is way bigger than just football. Do not get caught. I mean, I see this on Twitter. I already called this out a couple episodes ago. People get all dialed up and happy about the fact that, you know, and they craft on Twitter these phrases that are literally, they're designed to get high retweets. And it's like coaches on Twitter have all of a sudden become, you know, have become Hemingways trying to write phrases and proud of these phrases they've come up with. Never confuse some elegant phrase for a valuable action. Like, this is why I drive simplicity. It ain't about the elegance of the phrase. That's not your culture. It's the value of the action. And look, if an elegant phrase creates valuable action, great. But the only thing I care about is the action, because it's the only thing that really matters. The purpose of culture, Keith, the purpose of culture, again, and say in, you know, I help coaches build culture playbooks, okay? The purpose of that is not to provide an explanation. It's to produce execution. I'm not happy with a good explanation, happy with a good phrase. I'm not happy with something that rhymes. I'm not happy because it got retweets. All I care about is the execution. If I can get it across to you in 10 seconds in a way that you can execute it at perfection, then I would prefer to get it across in 10 seconds. And sometimes the way I phrase it might help that. But most of the time, it ain't going to happen like that. So the phrase is not that important. What's important is whether I can get your attention, whether it's explained clearly, whether it has the depth. So do not get caught up in the culture side of, wow, I got this word, or I got this phrase, or I got this. Nobody cares. Part of it is marketing. If you can get attention, great. It's to produce execution, not to provide explanation. All right, the third word, overused, underapplied, mental toughness. We should have gotten this one a long time ago. Mental toughness. Look, ignoring emotions or pretending that they don't exist is not mental toughness. That's mental weakness, right? That's mental blind spots. That's not, we've got to get away from this mental toughness phrase. Be mentally tough. No. Okay. Here's what mental toughness is, right? Mental toughness is creating emotions that fuel focused or disciplined action or whatever action that you're wanting to engage in. That's what I mean by discipline. If you know my definition of discipline, then you know discipline is training yourself to make choices, to meet standards and produce outcomes. Mental toughness is to create an emotion that helps you do what you need to do or steer an emotion that isn't helping you. So I think we ought to, frankly, I think, again, my opinion, I think we ought to just not use the phrase mental toughness, because it's impossible to use that phrase and then not get into what other people think of it. And now we're going to waste time debating. Here's what I think we ought to do. Rather than use the phrase mental toughness, be on the hook for what mental and emotional ask are you really wanting? Like what action are you asking them to engage in mentally and emotionally? Do you understand the experience that that person is going through? How well do you understand the experience that person is going through mentally and emotionally? And then do you know the specific mental and emotional requirement or technique or action that you need? Teach it. Don't use mental toughness. Get into the mental and emotional activity or behavior and teach that. So if it's focus, teach focus. If it's compartmentalization, teach compartmentalization. If it's steering quote-unquote negative energy towards a positive action direction, then teach it. But don't just throw mental toughness against the wall and hope that a player does good stuff with it. Because if you don't know what the mental and emotional act that you're asking for is, and you don't understand what the personal experience that that individual is going through, well, there's very little chance that throwing mental toughness at them is going to help them go through that.
And we're really, you know, my opinion as I study those kinds of things more and more, getting off track with what we think is training mental toughness today. And we go back to creating, like, you know, the Junction Boys kind of setting with Bear Bryant, grinding those guys down to nothing, getting them on the line, running more, you know, just physically, you know, fatiguing and exhausting those guys, thinking that we're producing mental toughness. And do you ever listen to Tim Ferriss, Brian? I don't know if that's a podcast you listen to.
You know, I have in the past. I have not in a long time now.
I pick out ones, and there was one that grabbed my interest on the, I think the last name of the guy is Waitskin, and he did a, this guy's kind of like a learning expert.
Josh Waitskin. Yeah, I'm familiar with him.
And he was talking about, I mean, and this guy has become elite in whatever he decides to pick up because he has a system for learning. And really, as he got into talking about how he's able to control these emotions and how he was talking about fighters. And, you know, we have this mental picture, you know, from watching, you know, Rocky or watching all these movies, and that these guys are, you know, sitting around with their fists clenched for hours, just keying up for this fight or this battle. You know, the old football movies kind of creating the same idea. And he's like, nah, man, I'm really relaxed. In fact, I liked to take a nap and like sleep almost up to the event. And then there, I trained myself and I had, you know, something that would elicit that emotion. He talked about, you know, in particular, he was talking about an Eminem song, you know, Lose Yourself. He's like, when I would hear that within seconds, just a few beats of that, it put me in the mental state I needed to be in, where I was confident and strong and had a feel for all my training that went into it. And it was a trigger for me. That's mental toughness, right? But that's not what we're doing.
No. And look, I mean, mental toughness can be a lot of things. I mean, this is, you know, mental toughness has a full range of stuff. It's peace and calm all the way to intensity and sprint, right? It's everything across the board. What I just mean is don't use mental toughness as a catch-all and throw it at your players. Just the phrase doesn't work. It just doesn't, you know?
And I think don't fall into the trap that only certain things build mental toughness, that it's, you know, only those fatiguing exercises after we've had a hard practice, that's going to create mental toughness. Some guys, yeah, because their triggers are in there for them to go out and work. Some other guys, they're out there surviving. They're the farthest thing from mental toughness that you could get. So, you know, you have to be careful of what you're lumping into it and think about really what is it you want? What's the result you want? And reverse engineer it from there. And the challenge, though, is, you know, going back to all those little arrows with inside that big arrow are all different. They're not exactly the same. There's different triggers, there's different buttons, and I mean that's the art behind coaching, is being able to understand all your individual people.
That's it. Angela, it comes back to, rather than mental toughness, just think, I want you to think of two things. Be on the hook for two things. What mental and emotional act are you asking people for? If you don't know what the answer to that is, then the people that you're coaching definitely don't. So this gives you skin in the game. Number two is, how well do you understand the personal experience that that individual is going through? Those are the two things. Here's the fourth one, the last one, the last overused word, underused action. Want. Want it. You got to want it. Who wanted it more? It's a very common coaching phrase, very common sports phrase. Look, if they don't want it, get them out or push them aside. By the time you're in this environment, wanting it can't be in the question. It's work plus standards plus time. Everybody wants it, Keith. Everybody in the history of sports wants. Everybody in history wants stuff. Nobody cares. If wanting it was the difference, a lot of people who are broke would have a lot more money. A lot of people who have no rings and no trophies would have a lot more. It's work. Don't use the word want. Use the word work. And then point out the work that's required. So this thing of want it, I mean, shoot, do young people need to want more stuff right now, Keith? Is that the big issue with young people? Do they need to want more stuff? Yeah. Is that the big issue in America, is we don't want enough? Is that it? Man, nobody really wants enough right now. No, that ain't the issue. It's work. So let's just flip. Don't want it, work it. I watched the game last night. You know, I didn't hear this last night, but you know, they throw a 50-50 ball up in the air, and the guy who comes down with it, what do they say? He wanted it more. And every time I hear it, I'm like, what the? No, that guy right next to him wanted it really bad too. It's who worked it. Who worked it? And then it's what? What kind of work? Because we don't talk about the kind of want very often. I think that might be an interesting conversation, but now we're not talking about want. Now we're going back to some mental and emotional stuff, but it's not want. It's not a want ethic. There is no want ethic. It's work ethic. Want can fuel work, but I don't think we're talking want there. And again, I don't think want is even the word to use. So I think that's the next one, is pull the wanted out. You know, is that you got to work it better than them. You don't got to want it more. You got to work it more. You got to work it better. You got to work it, you know, in a more detailed way. I just think that we're going to get more precise with that language, and it's going to drive better action for us. So those are the four. That's what I want. There's a lot more, but I think we're already stretched on time a little bit, but that's what I wanted to focus on here today.
Well, and that's exactly it, Brian. There is a lot more, and there's some that affect us more than others. We might not use that word culture. What are the words that we use constantly, and what is the training that we have behind those words so that we're getting the results out of that we want, right? That word somehow represents our belief. Let's make sure we're clear about that, and let's make sure we're clear about the behaviors. And if that's the beliefs and the behaviors, what are the results? Ultimately, at the end, it is execute, right? Go flip on your film. Go walk through your locker room. Everything going on in there, that's your culture. That's what you've built, right? That's what you are graded on, right? Just as much as we grade those players on Saturday, we're graded on those things. So I think it is this, you know, again, this podcast, whether you listen to it beginning of the week to get ready for the next one or at the end of the week to reflect back, you know, it doesn't have to be those four words, but think about your language and what you're using, your coaching cues, both on the field and with your off the field stuff that help drive your program, help drive your unit, your position group, whatever you coach, to make your team better. And ultimately, this is looking at you. How do you become better as a coach? How do you better do these things? And I think, BK, you've pointed out and you gave four great examples today of exactly what that looks like.
Yeah, there's plenty more where that came from. Obviously, I wanted to keep this tight focused on four, what I saw as four common ones. And I think you flip through Twitter and you find 20 more in 20 minutes. So a good starting point.
Well, BK, for our listeners out there, something that I love, helps me every morning, helps me get focused coming in at around 6 a.m. is the daily discipline. How do our listeners sign up for the Daily Discipline?
Yeah, just go to dailydiscipline.com. You can read some old entries on there. You can read the old posts. I've done it for almost 2 full years now. And so there's 5 days a week for 2 straight years. So I don't know, there's 400 some odd ones back there. It might take you a while to read through the old ones. But sign up for the daily email. It comes out at 6 a.m. dailydiscipline.com. Just an email in and you'll start getting it every day, Monday through Friday, like 30,000 other people.
And check out our show notes here for some related links. I always do pick out some of those things that Brian and I have talked about previously or that have come up in different articles or podcasts. Check out our show notes at blogs.usafootball.com. We also put up a companion blog every week where one of our writers goes back through and kind of picks out some of those main points. So if you want something later in the week to reflect back on and think about again, that'll be on blogs.usafootball.com. And we retweet those on our Twitter handle for football coaches. It's at FBDEV coach. Check that out as well. BK, as always, great talking with you. I look forward to getting better this week and thinking about all these things that we reflected on today and coming back at it again next week for some more.
That's what we're doing. Always good to be with you and everybody else, Keith.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.